Hey folks, this is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is going to be on freedom and pursuing life, liberty, and personal property. And the idea behind this, of course, is that without having a pursuit of liberty, without having liberty, then we are unable to pass on abundance. And I feel that with each generation since the founding fathers, we have lessened the amount of freedom in our country. And when we look around at the current state, we see that the freedom is quickly being taken away from us. Just wanted to look at a few areas in which it's really clear that our freedoms are being taken away, in which areas where we should be able to have an abundance amount of freedom, and yet it seems like the government is encroaching more and more upon those areas. So we're going to look at that. Before we do that, I want to direct you to some of the business. First of all, take a look at the website. Check out some of the new additions that we have on there. Continue to keep updated onto that, which brings up the second subject, and that is make sure that you are subscribed to our update list. I send out an email regular to those who are subscribed, letting them know of any updates and new podcasts that come out, as well as anything additional onto the website. You can do that on the first page of the podcast, which is in the web on the column, center of the column, right-hand column, or on any of the subsequent pages. It's on the top, and it says subscribe, become a part of the Legacy Partner team, and you can do that right there, and that will get you contact with regular updates to the podcast as well as to the other items on the website. Thirdly, connect with us on Facebook at facebook@legacypodcast.net, and then you can also connect with us, of course, on the website. If you want to email me, you can do that directly at steve@legacypodcast.net. If you want to give some kind of feedback, whether it be questions or suggestions or just going to give comments regarding any of the episodes, you can do that at feedback@legacypodcast.net. And then finally, tell your friends about us. Continue to share the word. If you like what you hear on this and you want to continue to see it grow, then share the word so that other people can learn from it and grow as well. So that just that takes care of the business. So let's look now at some areas of our lives where we think there might be some freedom, and yet when we get down to it, there is very little freedom. This actually started from a book I was going to write a few years back when I got frustrated after going down to our county office and realizing that I couldn't get much done because I kept going from one office to the other and there was too many regulations and restrictions on what I was trying to do. And so I came home here and I was going to write a book on the subject. And it turned into be an outline without a book. And so what I'm going to do is just kind of present to you some of the outline from this book. And the way that I presented it was I took a fictitious person, a fictitious family, Mr. and Mrs. Friedman is who I called them. And I was going to walk through their day and look at all the ways in which the government has involved themselves in the lives of this family. And so I want to do that, and we don't necessarily have to look at the Friedmans necessarily, but we can look at a typical situation or even look at our own situation and my situation here where I live. Now, first of all, let's look at housing. Now, you would think that living in the country in which we live, we would be able to choose the kind of housing that we want to live in. We should be able to choose the structure that we live in. We should be able to choose the location that we live in, and we should be able to choose to do with that structure and with that property whatever we want to do, as long as it does not infringe upon the rights of others. That would be a normal libertarian perspective on what we can do with our personal property and with our personal residence. However, that's not the way it works. In fact, there are a great deal of codes and regulations that restrict the freedoms that we have to our living situation. We must forfeit a percentage of the value of our house each year in property taxes. In various counties, these are, of course, at different levels, and it is a way where the county can gain some revenues. Now, of course, as property values decline, counties are struggling to make up the deficit that they were getting from the cost or from the money that was coming to the revenue from the property taxes. And yet I question whether property taxes are even right in the first place. I mean, who gives the government authority to take a portion of our income or take a portion of our property, take a portion of our possessions in order to pay for county requirements. And yet that is a reality in which we live. We must also, you would think that we should be able to live in whatever kind of house that we want to live in, but unfortunately, we must live in a house that has passed government building codes. And I want to just kind of look at a few of those county building codes because they're quite involved. And I'm speaking specifically about my own county, which I live in an R2, which is a rural number two area in our county. So there's more freedoms for me than there would be in somebody, let's say, in a neighborhood in the suburbs or even, you know, in the city or something like that. There would be much more restrictions than what I have. So what I'm saying is some of the more liberal restrictions, some of those that restrict the least on somebody's life and their property. And yet they are still significant. Now, we would think that we'd be free to choose, the kind of zoning that we want to live in, but we can't because there's actual different zoning requirements, and sometimes these even change. One of the board meetings I went to locally here, they were trying to change the zoning, and it would, of course, make somebody else's property values go down with this. And, of course, that is all just a result of the government involvement in our lives and the blowback that comes from that. You know, there are 25 articles regulating the zoning in our county. And, we must comply to each of these. Now, the reality is, I don't probably comply to all of them, as you'll see in just a minute. But first of all, there's area regulation. And just to give you more specific here, it says the minimum lot area for parcels in an A2, that's an agricultural 2 zone, district shall be 2 acres for parcels without public sewer, 20,000 square feet for parcels utilizing public sewer. So let's suppose that you wanted to, if you had 2 acres and you wanted to give 1 acre to your child and you keep 1 acre, you couldn't do that because it says that there have to be 2 acre lots. So, you know, we should be able to do what we want with our own property, but unfortunately we can't. The acreage and the boundaries of any lot or parcel area should be shown on a plat and surveyed and properly surveyed by the, so you have to pay for somebody to come out and survey your property. Now, you'd probably ordinarily do that anyway, but because it's a government regulation, we're forced to do it. Then there's setback regulations. In other words, no structure, it says, in an A2 district shall be located any closer to the center line of any road right-of-way or any designated primary highway than 130 feet or more, 75 feet or more center. So in other words, the bottom line to this regulation is that we have to have a certain distance between our property and the road. Now, obviously, most of us don't want to be right up on the road when we build our properties anyway, and yet when we build our houses anyway, and yet because we're forced to be a certain distance, it may restrict what we can do with our property. And, you know, maybe the best place is right up next to the road, and we'd have to take down trees in the back or something like that if we're going to be in there. And, you know, so the reality is, why can't we live where we want to live? But no, we have to be able to comply with certain regulations. And then there's the frontage regulations and lot width. On frontage, it says the minimum lot frontage for permitted uses in A2 districts shall be at least 80% of the required lot width. And so they have, you know, very specific restrictions as to what it can. The second article, of course, goes into various regions within the A2 area and different requirements for the different areas and this kind of thing. But there's some frontage requirements. And, you know, we had to have a certain amount of feet of road space in order for us to be able to build our property on. Now, we would have liked to have had it been further in the back and less long in the front along the road, but nonetheless, that's how we had to build it because that's the restrictions that were upon us. And then there's yard regulations. Now, our yard we don't follow this. So if there's any regulators out there that want to come and fine us or something, I guess they can do that. But yard regulations. The minimum size yard for each main structure in A2 district shall be 25 feet or more. The rear, each main structure shall have a rear yard of 35 feet or more. Our rear yard's not 35 feet. Our side yards aren't that. Our front yard is, but not our side yards. We have, you know, we have pasture around us because we raise animals and we put the animals in the pasture. And so I don't know whether that would be counted as yard or whether that would be counted as pasture. And, you know, we certainly don't designate it as yard. We designate it as pasture. And yet, so, you know, we're probably not even compliant with that. But who cares? Why should we be compliant to a law that tells us how big our yard should be, for goodness sakes? And then there's height restrictions. Buildings in the A2 district may be erected up to 35 feet in height. And then it gives some exceptions for, you know, different buildings like churches and things like that that might be in there, public buildings and churches and this kind of thing. So there's height restrictions. Let's say we wanted to build a certain house to take advantage of wind or take advantage of, you know, some kind of solar, passive solar lighting or something like that. It was higher than 35 feet. We couldn't do it. We'd have to get some kind of special regulation or special exemption from the regulation in order to do that. And then, of course, it has restrictions on corner lots and all these kind of things. So the bottom line is, with housing, there's all kinds of restrictions as to where we can live, how much we can build, what kind of structure we can build. And this doesn't even include all the inspections and all the necessary. You know, it would be difficult to build certain houses using some of the more sustainable type procedures. You know, if you wanted to build a tire house or cob house or something like that, you couldn't really do it in most counties. And, you know, I haven't investigated whether our county will allow to do it or not, but, you know, our house is a, you know, pretty basic house, but, you know, there's all kinds of restrictions. And why? Who gives the authority to government to restrict how we are to build our house and where we're to place our house on various properties? You see, what's happened over time is that we have gradually and slowly relinquished more and more of our freedoms to the government, and they've taken more and more of it. And that's just on a local level. If we look at the federal level, it gets even worse. But I want to just go back to a few other things. There is a regulation and a requirement in our county that pets be licensed. That is, that dogs be licensed. You would think that someone ought to be able to own a dog and not have to worry about licensing it in the local authorities. And not so in Cumberland County. We must have licensed dogs. We must pay the government to have the government determine the amount of dogs that we have. So we have to include this on the list. Now, the reality is, this has not been enforced. The county knows that I have a dog because when we went to the vet had to report it. And so the vet reported to our county. They thought we were in the neighboring county, and we weren't. And so the neighboring county contacted our county. So they know that we have a dog, but they haven't enforced this yet. So so far, we have not had to comply with this regulation. But it's still in the books, and it shows how involved the government is in our lives. And so, you know, we can't just have a dog. We have to have a licensed dog, one that's been approved, and the amount that we've been approved. And we must have government determined to vaccinate dogs. And so there's certain vaccines that dogs have to have in our county, and we have to comply with that. Now, again, once, you know, I've not done that. When I go to the vet, they ask us if we have, and, you know, I usually tell them the ones that we have had and not the ones that we haven't had. And, of course, they encourage us, you know, they don't fine me or nothing, but they report it. And so, you know, we have to pay a fee to have a license for our dog. And it's not very much. I think it's $4 for each dog. But why? Can't we have a dog without having to pay a license for our dog? And then, you know, you look at our food. Now, Joel Salatin has done a lot of, he's written a lot on this. You know, everything I want to do is illegal. And, you know, he's written you know, all kinds of books on the challenges that face farmers and face the consumer when it comes to food and, you know, the rights that are being taken away when it comes to that. And so I'm not going to get into that a whole lot, but I do have a quote, I think, that demonstrates that in just a minute. You know, we must buy food from distributors who have government-inspected food at government-inspected facilities. So, you know, on a farm here, we raise a bunch of different animals, and some of them are under various regulations and some of them are not. We can raise a certain amount of chickens without having to fall under some kind of regulation. We can raise rabbits without having to fall because they're not considered a you know, livestock. But sheep, we have to actually take to a USDA butcher in order to have that sold as parts. We can sell it live and, you know, then take it to the butcher and they can have it, you know, chopped up however they want, the person that purchased the animal. But up until that point, you know, we, if we want to sell it in pieces, we've got to take it to USDA butcher. And, there, you know, there's a lot of regulations like that. And so, you know, it has to be inspected by the government. Now, you know, we know that everything the government does pretty much is a failure. And so we cannot trust them to tell us whether our food is safe or not. They're the same people who, you know, also told the USDA is the same group that told, you know, farmers that they could feed their cows, dead cows. And then, of course, you end up with the bovine diseases and all this kind of stuff. And so, you know, that we must, and then not in addition to that, you know, we must forfeit half of our food or the equivalent taxes to the government. And, you know, there's a lot of taxes involved in farming and in getting food from the farm to the consumer. It, you know, Ronald Reagan was not a perfect president, but he said some things that were really good. And one of the quotes he said, I think, is illustrious for us. If people need any more concrete explanation of this, start with the staff of life, the loaf of bread. The simplest thing, the poorest man must have it. Well, there are 151 taxes now in the price of a loaf of bread. Of course, Ronald Reagan said this in 1975. And I'm sure it's gotten worse since then. It accounts for more than half the cost of a loaf of bread. It begins with the first tax on the farmer that raised the wheat. Any simpleton can understand that if a farmer cannot get enough money for his wheat to pay the property tax on his farm, he can't be a farmer. He loses his farm. And so it is with the fellow who pays the driver's license and the gasoline tax to drive the truckload of wheat to the mill. The miller who has to pay everything from Social Security tax, business license, and everything else. He has to make his living over and above that cost. So there we wind up with a loaf of bread. Now, an egg isn't far behind, and nobody had to make that. There's 100 taxes on an egg by the time it gets to the market, and the chickens didn't put them there. And so, you know, Reagan's quote is illustrious because it demonstrates all the taxes and all the regulations that are placed upon our consumption of food. The most important thing that we need in order to live is food. And so, you know, the government has gotten into our food supply and gotten into the distribution of our food in a way that is far beyond what was ever imagined by our founding fathers. I like what Joel Salatin said one time. He said that when the government gets between my food and my mouth, I consider it an invasion of privacy. And indeed it is. And so, you know, we looked at, you know, the restrictions on pets. We've looked at the restrictions on housing. We looked at the restrictions on food, the regulations there. Let's look at transportation. You know, you'd think that you'd be able to, you know, drive your car pretty much however you want. If you purchase the car, you should be able to do with that car as you please. And yet, that's not the case. So anyway, we're not free to drive at any time, anywhere, or in any vehicle. We must drive a government licensed, or we must be a government licensed driver. You know, my son is old now enough to where he can start getting his permit. And he has to go through the requirements necessary imposed upon him by the government in order to get his permit. And then, of course, that will only increase in order for him to get his driver's license. And so we have permitted and licensed drivers. And so not anybody can drive. Now, some would say, well, that's a good thing. We need to have some kind of restrictions upon who can drive and that kind of thing. Well, if they should be able to drive, they can drive. And if they, you know, they aren't able to, then they should be penalized when they do some harm. That's the way that it should be. And then, you know, they must drive a government-inspected car. I know certain counties have inspections for emissions and inspections for other kinds of things. I know that in our state we have inspections to make sure that our cars are running properly. And, you know, that's a good thing because we don't want to harm anybody. But most drivers are going to drive a safe car anyway. And so the restrictions that are upon them in government are restrictions that are imposed improperly and by force. And so we have to drive a government-inspected car.
And then we have to drive a government-registered car. Every year, we have to register our car at the county, let them know that we have it. And of course, part of this is for property taxes. So each year we have to register our car, and the counties know, you know, what car we're driving, and you know, it's in the books there. And if we change cars, we have to let them know. And if anything's changed, why? What? Who gave the county the authority to register our vehicles? Can't we drive a vehicle without them knowing about it? Well, not legally. And so with that, we've also been regulated. And then, of course, you know, we have to drive a car that's been taxed. We have to pay property taxes on our vehicle. And so, you know, part of the cost of maintaining our transportation is the cost of taxes that we owe to the government. And then, you know, to make matters worse, we have to drive on government monopolized roads. In other words, we have to drive on roads that they've prepared. Now, if they were free roads, there'd be different requirements for us. Now, you know, some would say, well, isn't it the responsibility of the government to have roads? Isn't it their job to create roads for us to drive on? Well, not necessarily. I believe anything that the government could do, the free market could do even better. And that would include roads. And so because we have to drive on monopolized roads, we have to submit ourselves to the regulations and requirements of the federal government and the state governments and local governments regarding our transportation and our vehicle use. And then, you know, let's look at education and what kind of restrictions there are on education. Now, in my family, we take a religious exemption and homeschool our kids, and so there's not a lot of restrictions on us. But if you don't take that religious exemption, then you're under all kinds of restrictions and all kinds of regulations. Most people have to send their children to government-inspected facilities to school, and then they have to learn from a government-approved curricula. Now, whether that is one that is a national curriculum or whatever it is, a state curriculum or sometimes even a local curriculum, is still a government-mandated curriculum that they must learn. Now, I know that some teachers say that they have some flexibility as to what they can teach, but not to a certain level. They still have to teach a certain standard. They still have to teach certain requirements in those courses. And so those are all mandated by the government. And then, of course, they're taught by licensed teachers. So, you know, you can't have a school that is taught without licensed teachers. Now, some Christian schools and some private schools and things like that are able to have different kind of licensing requirements than what is required by the public schools. And yet there is still that requirement. And, you know, we wonder whether this licensing requirement has done anything to provide a value to the educational system. And then there also, you know, is a requirement as to the amount of time that is spent each day in school. These are all mandated requirements that a student has to spend a certain amount of day in school. Why? What if they were able to get their work done in half the time because they were more efficient with their use? Well, the government doesn't care about that. They have to still be there during those school hours. And then, you know, they must attend the government-determined days per year. They have to be in school for so many days per year in order to be able to considered passing, having passed that year. Now, why is this? What if they were able to double up a couple of days and take a few more days off or get off a little bit earlier? You know, with homeschooling, we don't have those kinds of restrictions. And so, you know, we can double up and then, you know, take a day off, or, you know, we can, work through the material that we have planned faster pace. And so allows more time and flexibility. But with the government regulations, that's not so. And so in a public school or in a government-run school, you have the government restrictions as to the amount of time per day as well as the amount of days per year that you have to go to school. You know, if we choose not to send our kids to a government-run school and send them to a private school, or we homeschool them or something like that, we still have to pay the taxes to send other kids to these publicly-run schools. And so it's, in a way, you know, they are... The government is still stealing from taxpayers in order to distribute that money to a certain government officials, namely teachers and administrators, who then orchestrate the system of education. And so the school system, and then, of course, you know, not only do they have to go to a certain time period throughout the day and certain number of days per year, but they have to go to school for a certain amount of years. What if a child at, you know, age 13 or 14 realizes that he has enough school and he started his own business, he's off on his own? Well, that doesn't matter. He still has to continue going on school and learning the curriculum that they have placed for him at the various ages. And so there's a great deal of restrictions upon them. And as a result of that, of course, we are producing the most uneducated children for the amount of wealth that we have in our nation than any other nation. And it's staggering how much we spend on children for education and how little of education they actually receive. That's what is expected when you have such government regulations. And then I want us to look just for a moment and look at the job situation. You know, if you look in the news right now, all the news is on creating jobs and unemployment and trying to increase the employment and all these kinds of things. And yet, when we look at the kind of restrictions that are upon you as a business owner, a small business, a self-employed person, and the requirements that are necessary for you to jump through those hurdles, it's ridiculous. It's even worse if you want to be an employer and employ people and trying to hire somebody and pay for all those things. I've had experiences with both being self-employed and having a company and paying payroll and deducting taxes and doing all that kind of stuff and taking care of all the requirements necessary paperwork-wise in order to create jobs for people. It's ridiculous. And so, you know, being self-employed, you have to have a business license and you have to go down to the county and tell them about how much revenues you got coming in and or what you expect to bring in. And then based on that, they'll determine how much you need to pay for your business license. Well, why? What authority does the government have to tell us whether or not we can have a business? Now, what if we don't get the business license? Well, then we're fined. Why? Do they have authority over our property? Do they have authority over our ideas, the things that we have created, the things that we have made a business? But we have to pay a license. And then we have to participate in government-run retirement, disability and health care programs, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and, you know, all the other taxes now and the programs, health care programs, the Obamacare, whatever we call it or whatever it's going to be when it finally comes out. Those are going to be more restrictions, more requirements upon us as employers and as self-employed people and the requirements that are necessary for that. We have to pay for all these things. We can't avoid them. And, you know, when you're self-employed, you really realize how much of our taxes are going to that. Over 15% is going to pay for those various programs. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket science to figure out we're not going to have that as a benefit for, you know, those of us who are in our 40s. We're not going to be able to see any of that money. It's going to be gone by the time we get to that age. And even if it was going to be here, we still don't want that kind of program. We want to be able to be free and to make our own choices and to run our own thing. You know, it amazes me that, you know, if you're responsible enough to start a business, to open a business, to run a business, you should be responsible enough to set some of that money aside and retire without having government assistance. But the government thinks you're not capable of doing that, and so they have to restrict you and require you to pay certain taxes, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, those kinds of things, because they don't think you're responsible enough to do it on your own. That's belittling, and it is a great deal of restrictions on us. And then, you know, not to mention just the financial responsibility, but then they have the, you know, the responsibility as a owner of a business or a self-employed person to work for free in filling out all the crazy regulatory paperwork and all the taxes and all that are necessary for us to file properly all the taxes that are due. And, you know, it's one thing if, you know, the government was going to give us the deduction on the amount of time that we spent and the effort that went into preparing all these documents, but that's not the case. And so really what it is it's involuntary servitude. They're making us work for them for free by providing for them all these papers that are necessary to comply to their laws as business owners. As business owners, we're required to work without pay for 3 months in order to pay for our taxes. That's what average is. You know, the 3 day or whatever it is now is in May, where you have to work till May or April or something to finally start working for yourself, because you have to pay all the rest in taxes. Now, I know that there are some people who listen to this who probably don't pay anything in taxes, except for maybe Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid, that kind of thing. You're a portion of it if you're an employee, or if you're an employer. If you're self-employed, you have to pay both portions of it. But nonetheless, there's probably some who are listening to this who probably are of the income level where you don't have to pay any actual income tax. You've got a large family, you've got a lot of deductions, a lot of credits, that kind of thing. And so that may not be the situation with you. And yet, most people still have to work a great deal of their days in the first quarter of the year or something like that in order to pay for the taxes. And so again, it's a type of involuntary. You know, I didn't volunteer for that. I was born into this country without any idea as to the requirements tax wise, the requirements regulatory wise, and you know, what can we do? Well, I'm going to give you some ideas of what we can do here in just a minute. And then, you know, we look at the self-protection. We ought to be able to protect ourselves against harm. How can we defend ourselves? How can we make sure that we keep our liberties? How can we make sure that we are able to exercise our freedoms, pursue property, pursue life, protect life and liberty if we're not able to defend ourselves? And yet we see with an increasing amount of zeal a effort to restrict the amount of freedoms that we have when it comes to defending ourselves. No more greater do we see this than with the whole idea of transportation on airlines. Now with the Patriot Act and the TSA and all the kind of restrictions that are upon us for our travel, we can't protect ourselves in the travel. We certainly can't guarantee that the government is going to protect us or the TSA is going to protect us when we travel. But I want to look more specifically at the whole idea of being able to defend ourselves with arms. You know, the Second Amendment tells us that we have the right to be able to bear arms. And the idea there is that we are able to defend ourselves against a government that oversteps its bounds. That was the whole intention with it. It was not the intention, as you might hear some people say, that it was allowing us to be able to carry guns so that we can go hunting. Well, certainly that's included in it, but more so, it is the whole concept that the Founding Fathers understood the governments will usurp authority if we don't keep them in check. And the only way for us to keep them in check is to be able to bear arms against them. And yet, we are restricted from doing so. There's a couple ways. We have to have registered guns. And so, you know, if you buy a gun from a gun dealer, or, you know, a legitimate gun dealer or at a gun show or something like that, in most states, you have to go through the registration process and have to register that gun so the government knows. They do a background check and make all these kinds of, you know, restrictions upon you. Even if you're a law-abiding citizen, you have to go through these various steps. And then we also have, you know, a license in order to carry our gun concealed. Now, in most states, you know, this varies. Some states, you can't even carry it concealed at all. Now, in Virginia, you can carry it concealed. You can carry it open. Anybody can carry it open. But to carry it concealed, you have to have a certain permit to do so. And so there's restrictions on that. Why shouldn't we be able to carry a gun concealed? I mean, it's not the good guys concealing guns is the problem. It's the bad guys that are concealing guns. Well, how can you tell the difference? You think a bad guy is going to, you know, comply with the law, go get, you know, the proper permit to carry his gun concealed? Of course not. And so these restrictions, just like with all other regulations and restrictions, are, you know, maybe done with good intentions, but the result is they only restrict the freedoms of those who are law-abiding citizens. And they never really help solve the problem that they were created to solve. And then, you know, we must only acquire certain kinds of guns. There are restrictions as to the kind of gun that we can have and the amount of guns that we can have. And you know, we can't have automatic guns, even though those who might encroach upon our freedoms have automatic guns. We have to have semi-automatic guns. And, you know, other restrictions like that are similar. And it prevents us from being able to bear arms like we should. And then, you know, I already mentioned it already, but you know, we can only buy a certain amount of guns. Now, in the state of Virginia, because I have a concealed carry permit, I can buy more than one gun, you know, at a certain given time. But There are restrictions in our state as to the amount of guns you can purchase over a certain amount of time, and you know, why? What if somebody wants to buy a gun a day for a week? Well, they can't do it unless they've got the certain permits and the certain requirements. They've met certain requirements in order to do so. And so, you know, those are just a lot of different ways. Some of them may seem insignificant to you, and that's part of the problem. So you see, when we think that these things are insignificant is when we realize that, you know, the more we will turn these powers over to the government and we allow them to restrict us, because we'll think, well, that doesn't really apply to me. And then the government will take that authority, and then it continues to go down that slippery slope to where there is very little freedom left. And I'm afraid that we are moving in that direction. You know, I say this because I think it's important for all of us. If we're planning on leaving a legacy, we need to ask ourselves what kind of legacy we're going to leave. Are we going to leave a legacy when it comes to government intervention in our lives to where there's no freedom? Or are we going to leave a legacy where there is true freedom, where we are able to exercise our lives in such a way where we can pursue life and liberty, and we can pursue the pursuit of happiness or property without any kind of restrictions from the government? Well, that's really the question at hand. And unfortunately, with each generation, the restrictions have gotten worse and worse. Now, there's been a few that have been lifted, but over time, they're continuing to get worse. And so it's important for us, and this is an exercise that each of you should do. Now, I've kind of laid out kind of my situation here, just a few areas in which the government has involved itself in our lives. But it would be a good exercise for each of us to go home and take out a piece of paper and to write down all the ways in which the government interacts with us on a daily basis. Or maybe as we go through the day, just think about, okay, well, how is the government involved in my life in this way? And go throughout the day that way. And you'd find that there's nothing that we do in this life that the government does not also have its handprint on. Now, we know that the internet is the least regulated form of information transfer. And that's part of the reason why I'm doing a podcast. You see, part of the reason why I'm doing a podcast is because I want to be able to teach people some of the concepts that I've learned about building wealth and some of the things that I'm doing. And yet, because of various regulations, and I won't get into all this, but because of the regulations of being a licensed financial advisor and insurance agent and these kinds of things, I've been restricted as to what I can say and what I can't say. Well, I've gotten tired of that, and I finally decided, you know what, I'm just going to say what I need to say. If I lose my license, I lose my license. And it's more important to be able to get the information out. And so I'm using podcasts and internet and things like that to be able to teach people information that will enable them to leave a legacy of abundance. And the only area in which this can truly be done, you know, we still have the content and books that can be done, but there's nothing like being able to transfer electronic forms through the internet and reach more people. And so take some time this week, take some time today to look over your own life and to see all the ways in which the government is intruding into your affairs and preventing you from living a life of freedom. So what can we do? Well, number one, work at the local level. Many of the restrictions, many of the regulations that I've mentioned already today are regulations and restrictions that are placed upon us at the local level. And sometimes that can be the easiest area to change. Now, sometimes there is very little enforcement of some of the rules. I've already mentioned how with our dog and the licensing requirements for our dog, they have not been enforced yet, and they may not be enforced. And so sometimes when you work at a local level, you can know more specifically about which areas in which you can focus and which areas you can actually overturn some of the regulations that are there. And that would be my suggestion, is that, you know, we overturn regulations. One person suggested at a board meeting that I was at that we should reduce one paragraph of regulation for every paragraph of regulation that we add. I would say let's reduce 3 or 4 or 5 paragraphs of regulation for every paragraph of regulation that we add. And that would be in the right direction of minimizing our regulations and restrictions upon us. And then use freedom that we currently have. In other words, you know, we've been given certain rights, certain privileges by God, and we should be able to use those. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, property, And when we fail to use them to the extent that we can, then we are in essence allowing the government to enforce itself upon us without our complaint. And so every right that we have, everything where we can have an effect upon society, we should do. And then it would be harder for the government then to impose certain restrictions and certain regulations upon us. You know, I think of carrying a gun. If you can carry a gun, carry a gun, because, you know, you never know when that right would try to be taken away from taken away from us by the government. And the more people that are actually acting out the rule, the more people that are actually taking upon themselves the freedom that has been given to us, the harder it would be for a government to take those away. And so we cannot be complacent, but we must actually use the freedoms that we currently have. And I've already mentioned avoid unenforceable laws. Now, I'm not saying that we should avoid taxes. There are people who are in jail for trying to evade taxes, and I'm not suggesting that in any way. But I am saying to become educated and learn all the ways in which you can work around some of the restrictions and some of the regulations that are there. You know, this is one of the things I so admire about farmers in so many ways, is that we often try to find ways of working around the situation. And so, you know, we can't sell a lamb without going to USDA butcher. Well, we can sell a lamb that's not yet butchered, and then the person who purchased the lamb can then take it to the butcher and do with it as they will. And so there are, and same thing with like milk, raw milk. I know that there's a lot of restrictions on raw milk in around the various states, and yet when you talk to somebody who's raising cows for dairy, they have figured out ways where they can sell milk shares. And so the customers that they serve can get their raw milk, they can get compensated for it, and yet they not have to actually sell the milk. And so there are ways in which you can work around some of the situations. This is what wealthy people do all the time with their taxes, is they find ways in which they can avoid the taxes. You know, right now in the news, this whole deal with Berkshire Hathaway's leader, and you know how much he doesn't pay in taxes, so-called. Of course, he pays a ton in corporate taxes, and all of his money pretty much is acquired through, or you know, his income is acquired through capital gains and dividends and things like that, and so he's paying at a lower rate than if it were all income taxes. And so this is the whole deal that Obama is trying to pass. This legislation requiring millionaires and billionaires to be able to pay more in taxes. But they basically just figured out loopholes, and there'll be continually to be loopholes. But so it's our responsibility to find those loopholes and to use them, is what I'm saying. And that will enable us to be able to be freer in the use of our resources. So I know I covered a lot of information there, but I want you to be thinking about the ways in which the government has intruded into our affairs, and the ways in which the government has involved itself in our lives in ways that it was never intended, and then to find ways of which we can fight against that and be able to maintain and restore some of the freedoms that have been lost. And with that, this has been episode 13, I guess it is, with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?